Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Mind, heart, and soul. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick, inviting you to come on the journey, join in the quest. Spirit Talk Live is our monthly forum for exploring the great questions of existence, for joining in the quest to find meaning and worth in life through intellectual inquiry and sacred spirits. It's a worldwide conversation for spiritual seekers and rational empiricists, for people of all religions and of no religion, of all faiths and of no faith, because here on Spirit Talk Live, nothing is sacred and everything is sacred. Well, welcome, welcome, welcome to this month's edition of Spirit Talk Live. We're very glad you're here. We thank you for joining us and for being part of our vast listening audience. Before we begin, as usual, I'd like to remind you of my newest book, Radical Loving, One God, One World, One People, published by Monkfish. It is a compelling appraisal of the state of our present-day world and a bold, visionary, spirit-filled blueprint for its transformation and evolution through radical loving and awesome holiness, a call to oneness, a promise that Earth can be Eden once again. It's a very important book. It's a book that captures the Weltanschauung of this moment in time and in history, and in the midst of the politics of the world and the politics particularly here in America, it's a book that anybody who cares about love and compassion and decency and dignity will want to read. So I call it to your attention, Radical Loving, One God, One World, One People. If you want to know more about it, the website is Radical Loving Book, radicallovingbook.com. The book is published by Monkfish. You can grab it off of Amazon or any other bookseller. So today I'm really, really very delighted to welcome our guest. He is a man that I've known just for a few years, but have come to admire tremendously. Dr. John Ryman is a licensed clinical psychologist who specializes in consoling clients who have undergone severe trauma in their personal or professional lives. He comes to Spirit Talk Live today to help us understand and cope with the trauma we've all been going through as a society and as individuals in these last years and months with COVID, with wars across the world, with incivility and hatred in our streets and on our campuses, in our politics and in our communities, particularly we in the Jewish community. The trauma of October 7th, the massacres by Hamas at Nova and in the kibbutzim in the south in Gaza, and the continual coping with that trauma. Ellen and I have just returned from Israel, and there we saw an entire country traumatized, an individual people traumatized. I went into a store where I've known the owner for, I don't know, 30, 40 years or more, and I said to him, "How are you?" He said, "Well, there's no business at all because no tourists are coming, but I don't care because my whole life is right over there." And he pointed to a picture on the wall, his son in his army unit, and said, "He's been in and out of Gaza for the last 6.5 months out of these last 9 months, and I don't sleep at night worrying about my son. That's all I care about." And that's the notion there. And at the same time, there is no fear. People are strong, and they know that right will prevail. And so Dr. John Ryman is here to help us cope with that kind of trauma and that kind of severity in our lives. But he too has just returned from a journey to Eastern Europe, and I'd like to first begin there. So first of all, to Dr. John Ryman, welcome, my friend. It is a pleasure and an honor to have you this morning with us on Spirit Talk Live. Dr. John Ryman, welcome.
Thank you, Rabbi. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, very well. Thank you. Thank you. So you just went on a journey to Eastern Europe, and you went seeking after some family roots. Please share with us what you saw, what you did.
Sure. Thank you for the opportunity to be here first. I did go for a number of reasons. Largely because it was a trip I have avoided for 7 decades and thought it was time. I'm shaken. I've been home for 4 days. I was face to face for 2 weeks with the human and material machinery of genocidal erasure. Four concentration camps across Eastern Europe in which we spent a good bit of time. I was exposed to depravity levels and humanity voids that I really can't find words for yet and don't know quite how to communicate. As I set the table for this hour, I think it's important that I communicate a bit about how I navigated it, and I'm still navigating it, if that's okay.
Please.
So, even as I can't communicate yet what I experienced, I did find that I could best tolerate it if I held foreground a job. And the job, I thought, would be to bless, and for me that might mean imagine sending goodness, to bless the space and all who were and all that was. Doing that from my heart felt important to do, but also somewhat self-serving, and that it enabled me to stand there in it. I opened to, in standing there, in trying, opening the heart, I did dial into wisps kind of what I would call an infinite presence, a presence. Not in any petitionary way or asking for anything, but just kind of as a refuge and a salve for the pain through connection to something greater. And I wrote in my journal after Auschwitz, this Rilke little piece that I love and that somehow I found helpful. I'll read it. A billion stars go spinning through the night, blazing high above your head. But in you is the presence that will be when all the stars are dead.
Beautiful, profound. And so what do you derive from this, Dr. John?
Again, please, I couldn't
hear. What did you derive from this?
What did I derive from this?
Yes.
I think I'm still deriving, still sort of metabolizing. I mean, the highlight of the trip was going to my great-great-great-grandfather's synagogue, which was still standing outside of Warsaw. Near Krakow, actually, and being able to put my hand on that building and to imaginally connect with something that felt that I wanted to hold on to while I was there. So I'm still in the taking away or deriving process.
And how did you find your great-grandfather's synagogue?
Went into the Ellis Island database. From that, I could see the ship that he and his family came on, when they came, but also there was background information and a few names. We took all of that Ellis Island, my brother and I, took all of that Ellis Island data, and then I contacted a very experienced guide in Warsaw who could lead people with questions like mine physically to the places of their ancestry after he himself did considerable research. And then without doubt, as we drove the 2 hours to get there, I think he probably knew what was there. And I don't think was as shocked as I was to actually find this building still standing, a building that had actually for more than 100 years never been used as a synagogue, because after World War II, the Jewish population of this town, Debica, was completely eliminated, as was true with lots of Polish and Eastern European towns. So it was empty. It had been variably used as a warehouse. There it still stood.
Were you able to go inside?
No. And no. Best I was able to do was to put my hand on it, take a picture of my hand on it, and I have that picture of my hand on it as the screen that when I open my phone it comes up to. And find that part of the metabolizing process I'm doing, just to see and continue to experience that connection.
So the dead great-great-grandfather survived and came to America?
Yes. Yes.
Yep. So you're here because he was able to, even long, if you say great-great-great-grandfather, that's a number of generations ago, so it's certainly before the Holocaust, and so he was able to survive and bring him and thus your family and thus you and your children to this country of freedom.
It's really a good, yes, I think that's really, really very well said. The town, Debica, my guide showed me some data, and the town was 80% Jewish prior to World War II. There remain no Jews in the town at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my family is from Ukraine, and my grandfather came very early also, probably in the even late 1890s, very beginning of the 1900s, and that's how our family got here. And I'm sure you are grateful as I am to the vision of your great-great-grandfather who left, I would assume, he left us his parents and a good deal of his family behind and came to, as we say, from darkness to light.
Yeah. Yep.
So you wrote me a note the other day about a concept called moral injury in context of when you were on this trip. What is that, and how does it connect?
Maybe since we're talking about trauma, I can address moral injury kind of in a bit bigger frame, if that's okay. I'll try to do it as expeditiously as I can. I will answer your question. Trauma broadly is would be when we experience very stressful, frightening, or distressing events that are difficult to cope with or out of our control. There's no rule about what experiences can be traumatic, and there are quite a number of kinds of trauma, way too many to be able to name here. But I would like to name a few, and moral injury will be one of them, given both our time and focus constraints, and also I picked a few with relevance to like current world events. So first, I wanted just to speak about collective trauma. And a collective trauma is when a traumatic event happens to a large number of people at the same time. It doesn't mean that everyone who experienced the event feels the same way about it. Everybody probably navigates it in their own way. But there is, there are social kind of norms around how we collectively process and talk about it all. So that first, I'm just going to broadly call collective trauma. Next is generational trauma. And again, I'm picking these in part because you're a rabbi, this is Spirit Talk Live, and there is at least some Jewish context to this. The next is generational trauma or intergenerational trauma, and that's the type of trauma that's experienced across generations of family, culture, or group. For example, there's some evidence that shows children and grandchildren of people who survived the Holocaust experience higher rates of mental health problems and enduring trauma. There's a field emerging called epigenetics, which from a scientific point of view begins to crystallize that. Moral injury is the next one. And moral injury kind of means how you feel when you're exposed to a situation that goes against it just goes radically against the grain. It's a psychological, social, and really sometimes spiritual response to events that that conflict with a person's values or beliefs. So moral injury will occur, for example, when someone witnesses or learns about an act that goes against their beliefs. It can lead to all sorts of feelings of shame, disgust, anger, and can impact quite a bit in terms of the way someone is navigating their daily life. I thought interesting, Rabbi, that in March of this year, the American Psychiatric Association is considering a new medical diagnosis, naming it moral injury and defining it as a profound wound that alters one's worldview, one's sense of right and wrong, and of good and evil. This, in recent years, there's been a growing body of research on moral injury and how we navigate it, how we deal with it. There's no evidence-based answer to that yet. What I did relative to moral injury and some of the other pieces of trauma that I thought might be relevant to this would be just to name a few kind of navigation strategies for folks to consider applying to their own lives and perhaps sharing with others. Please, not sure if I answered your question.
Yeah, please go ahead.
No, I'm not sure if I did. Oh, do you want me to move ahead with that?
Yes, please.
Okay. I think in the face of it, from for example, a Jewish, and I think frequently a religio, spiritual perspective, love informs the heart of kind of how we're commanded, and opening our hearts to and connecting with love is often the central currency of a spiritual path. But alongside that place in me, for example, where love abides, I'm also finding terror, anger, hatred, detestation, and ill will. What am I going to do with these? I think strategy one here in navigating this territory is it's making space for them. It doesn't mean I'm going to act on them or reify them, but I really don't want to route these feelings out or paper them over. I want to make room for them. I want to receive and process all of this, all of what I'm feeling, in a spiritual context, but not perform a spiritual bypasses. A spiritual bypass. And what I mean by that is I want to be able to make room for and not push away all of these feelings and or kind of switch over to some more to a saccharine sort of approach to it all, but to engage the full spectrum of feelings. For me, this has a strong spiritual dimension, because for me, if I am true to my personal theology of panentheism, all is in God, it all belongs, all of my experience, simply because it's there, and therefore in God. So strategy one is making space for it all. I can pause after each one if you'd like, or roll on.
Go right ahead, roll on. You're on a roll, Dr. John. We're with Dr. John Ryman. This is Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick, and we are listening to brilliance, my friends. This is utter brilliance. Go ahead, Doctor.
The second piece, I think, in meeting all of the storm that's brewing within me from, as I referenced a minute ago, these different domains of trauma in contemporary life, the next and important piece is self-compassion. It's an easy word to speak about. It's referenced continuously. It is, interestingly, in the psychological literature. And by the way, I am not a licensed social psychologist, just as a correction. I'm a licensed psychotherapist in Oregon.
We're coming up against a hard break, so we're going to continue in just a moment. This is Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick with Dr. John Ryman talking to us about coping with trauma, particularly in the Jewish world for our land and our people, but in the entire world for all that is going on in wars across the world, incivility and hatred in our streets and on our campuses, in our politics, in our communities. We'll be back with Dr. Ryman in just a moment after these messages, as always, inviting you to come on the journey, join in the quest.
In sacred literature and the Bible, God is known by many names. However, which name for God embodies the spiritual wholeness and essence of God? Discover The Real Name of God is a new book by Rabbi Wayne Dossick. He explores and finds the real name of God. Why is that important? Because the name of God unites all religions and is embedded within us. Get The Real Name of God at your favorite bookstore or online at Amazon.com. The ideas in this book can be world-changing. The Real Name of God by Rabbi Wayne Dossick.
When you're looking for bedding, department store prices can shock you. Well, be shocked no more. Sell steak cheap, not cheap steak. That's the motto of Anna's Linens. Although they don't sell steak, they do sell the best bedding, bath, and home decor items. They strive to provide their merchandise at extreme value to their customers, and they do it. Great everyday prices on everything and military discounts. Plus, if you visit them online, they have clearance items and internet specials. Visit them online now at HealthyLife.net's advertiser page.
Save the Animals Today offers a respectable retirement and end-of-life experience for all the horses that have been abandoned as they age. Not a day goes by that people don't call Save the Animals Today looking for a place for their horses. Patty and the folks at Save the Animals Today do their best to bring as many horses as they possibly can to beautiful Dudette Ranch to love them and care for them. Dudette Ranch is a special place. Horses and other farm animals enjoy the peaceful sanctuary of the lovely hills north of San Diego. Volunteers of all ages come to interact with and take care of these wonderful creatures. Older folks who had horses when they were growing up and now have some free time especially enjoy helping around the barn with animals who want the extra attention. Save the Animals Today would like to provide shelter for every farm animal who needs rescue. Right now, there's a waiting list. Dudette Ranch needs your help. The horses need your help. You can help these magnificent animals by making a tax-deductible donation to Save the Animals Today. $25 will make a difference, and $25 a month will mean another older horse will enjoy its older years, loved and cared for. If you want to help even more, visit the website at www.savetheanimalstoday.org.
Music, information, and friends. HealthyLife.net.
We're back. It's Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick. I'm here with Dr. John Ryman. He'll tell us again, but a psychologist, I don't know the exact title, who is a expert in trauma. He has been working with individuals who have face-to-face personally experienced horrific individual or mass casualty trauma. That's his specialty. Can you imagine sitting and listening to that all day as your profession, as your job? Before we go back to the talk that we were on, Dr. Ryman, could you just tell us a little bit about your practice? I mean, it sounds in many ways horrific and incredibly helpful to deal with individuals who have faced personal or mass trauma. First of all, how did you choose such a field? And second of all, what's an overlying principle of how you help people who have experienced these kinds of traumas?
Yeah, I think the overlying principle will become apparent as I continue to unpack these strategies. In terms of my practice, I'm semi-retired. Importantly, I'm not a psychologist. I'm a psychotherapist, which has regulatory and licensing importance to make clear. I have been working in trauma for some time. My present time, Oregon-based licensed practice is quite narrowly related to three very specific trauma contexts. One would be individuals who have unintentionally killed or caused the death of other people. Number two would be law enforcement officers and dispatchers experiencing duty-related trauma when it just becomes too much or overwhelming. And third, a very narrow silo, working with people who have had and presently are experiencing cerebrospinal fluid, spinal leaks. It's a kind of newly found but quite disabling and traumatizing medical experience, and the accompanying medical trauma going through procedures and so forth. So those are sort of the narrow pieces, which at this point I am just as busy as I ever would want to be, and am enjoying expanding my life, semi-retirement, into other areas of growth and expansion personally. So.
And how do you go home at night? I mean, I'm asked this often. In my 50-plus years career as a rabbi, I've officiated at over 1,000 funerals. And I'm often asked how I cope with that kind of grief and seeing that kind of grief in front of me day in and day out. How do you go home and cope with what you have heard in your practice during the day?
Yeah, great question. Two things I'll want to say. One, I'm blessed with being a crier, and even the biophysiology of crying, just in terms of hormonal and enzymatic release. So I'm a crier, and that helps. But first and foremost, I think I'm often asked the same question you are. And what's emerging in mostly anecdotal circles, but hopefully expanding into research, I think the assumption that people make is that helping professionals, be they clergy or psychotherapeutic or medical or any helping person, is directly the magnitude of the horror and the awfulness of the event or circumstance is what colors or is what informs their post or post-event experience. So like after I've been with somebody and it's just off the chart, unimaginably horrific, the assumption is that that would be what affects me post and what I take home. But what a lot of us are starting to experience, and this is not coming from any sort of egoic claim, but instead, I think recognizing that the kernel, that what's most useful, ultimately, in being with, holding space for, holding on to somebody who's experienced just a cataclysmic event, is to drop into my own humanity and to meet someone in theirs. Another way of saying it would be to open my heart in hell. It's not, again, other than just dropping into my essential humanity. The skills are secondary. The psychotherapeutic techniques, all of that, secondary to just dropping in to my essential humanity. Now, why I'm mentioning that is because the initial assumption is that it's the horrificness of the event that colors the helper's post-event experience. But what we're finding, what I certainly find, and others with whom I've spoken about this, it's not the horrificness of the event that colors the helper's post-experience. It's the self-perceived sense of contribution or efficacy. And if dropping into shared humanity is what's done, that in and of itself carries enormous power. It doesn't cancel out the horrificness or the trauma, but it matches it with a level of having touched something with another human being that is really what I think is the central currency of psychotherapy anyway, and in a very traumatic event, this just seems like what's operational. So I can come home, to answer your question, after something, and if I feel as though we've touched that place of shared humanity and somebody can sort of, with me, land in our shared humanity, that's okay. Where I have trouble, and others with whom I've spoken similarly have trouble, is that when I'm with somebody in a highly traumatic event and we don't connect and we sort of bounce off each other, it's that that I'm going to come home and probably have a more difficult time with the event.
The wounded healer brings his her compassion to the healing.
Yes, including self-compassion.
Right.
I'm just returning to self-compassion again for a moment. In lots of literature, recovery from trauma, dealing with depression, dealing with anxiety, self-compassion comes up on the top of the list as just key for all of that.
Once again, a brilliant analysis. Thank you. So, going back to where we were before I so rudely interrupted with that question.
Fine. So, we were talking about initially...
Well, actually, we're going to have to break now again because we are against a hard break. And we'll be back. This is Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick with John Ryman, a clinical psychotherapist who specializes in trauma for individuals and trauma for an entire community. And we'll talk to him more about the healing techniques, and I want to talk to him particularly when we return about what is going on in Israel and with anti-Semitism in the world today. This is Spirit Talk Live. I am Rabbi Wayne Dossick. We'll be back after these messages. As always, inviting you to come on the journey. Join in the quest.
In sacred literature and the Bible, God is known by many names. However, which name for God embodies the spiritual wholeness and essence of God? Discover The Real Name of God is a new book by Rabbi Wayne Dossick. He explores and finds the real name of God. Why is that important? Because the name of God unites all religions and is embedded within us. Get The Real Name of God at your favorite bookstore or online at Amazon.com. The ideas in this book can be world-changing. The Real Name of God by Rabbi Wayne Dossick.
In 1972, Sur La Table opened in Seattle, selling hard-to-find kitchen items, and now they have 55 stores nationwide, offering kitchen tools from around the world to prepare any cuisine. Sur La Table has a full range of houseware and kitchen products, even books and food. Visit a Sur La Table store, or better yet, for faster service, go to thehealthylife.net's advertiser page and click on Sur La Table. With the best products, gift cards, and sale items, you can be on your way to being a first-class cook right now.
Do you wonder what is happening in our world? Do you wonder what the forces of the universe are doing to us? Is your life affected by the ebb and flow of events over which you seem to have little control? The answers to these questions and more can be found in the internet publication Cosmic Times, Spiritual News You Can Use, a bi-monthly channel transmission from Ellen Kaufman Dossick. Since 1994, the Cosmic Times has offered detailed information about what is happening energetically in our cosmos and how we can best support the emerging consciousness within ourselves and our world. Many people feel like the Cosmic Times keeps them sane in a seemingly crazy world, lifts their vibrations, and supports their continuing growth and expansion. You can subscribe to the Cosmic Times by going to the website www.soulmemorydiscovery.com. Join the thousands who benefit from the wisdom and insights in the Cosmic Times and receive spiritual news you can use. www.soulmemorydiscovery.com.
Information, entertainment, worldwide. HealthyLife.net.
This is Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick, along with Dr. John Ryman, clinical psychotherapist, who specializes in coping with trauma, individual trauma, and collective trauma. We've been talking about coping mechanisms, and Dr. Ryman would like to continue talking about coming into our own hearts as part of the ways that we cope with trauma. Dr. John Ryman.
Thank you, Rabbi. One of the contexts for doing all of this, for those of us who are Jewish, is navigating sort of the incredibly complex and incredibly painful in lots of dimensions situation as it is. I think I won't be addressing particulars related to the extant situation, but more kind of staying with these broader navigation strategies, which I think can be applied for Jews or for anybody navigating these sorts of challenges. So as Rabbi just
obviously what's up in our minds right now is Israel, but if we were Catholic or Protestant 20 years ago, we could have been concerned with Northern Ireland. And if we are black or white 20 years ago, we could have been concerned with South Africa. So these are actually geopolitical issues all over the world, which affect all of us, but particular groups at a particular time. So at this moment, it's for us, it's Israel, and for those who are supporters of the Arab world, it's so-called Palestine. But if you wish to stay away from those politics, just knowing that these coping mechanisms are not just because we're in the midst of trauma right now, we Jews, but that other ethnic groups and other religious groups have been in the midst of trauma all throughout the ages. Dr. Yeah. Reimann.
Beautiful framing. Thank you. Really, thank you. So, sharing our hearts, what does that mean? To me, it means speaking the truth of our own and capably listening to each other's interior experiences. What I'm not talking about are sentences that start with, I feel like, where the currency is often judgment or point of view or perspective on an issue, but instead feelings about what's going on in my heart, not outside in the world. We take plenty of time for doing all of that. So why do we do it? Why would we open our hearts to each other? There is a quote that I've long loved by a gentleman, Douglas Steere, S-T-E-E-R-E, a Quaker, who writes, "To listen another's soul into a condition of disclosure and discovery may be almost the greatest service that any human being ever performs for another." I'll read it again. To listen another's soul into a condition of disclosure and discovery may be almost the greatest service that any human being ever performs for another. So, for example, as a Jew in pain, and let's say anger is a part of it, I'm not talking about sharing what I'm angry about or why, but instead how my body contracts and my head throbs and I recognize my own possible impulses that I don't like or that I feel irritable. A reasonable question is, well, how does that sharing do anybody any good? I think that listening each other into discovery provides, to go back to something I said earlier, that connection for and to our shared essential humanity. It also goes back in terms of how do we do that? How do we actually listen to each other? What's the technology of that? And again, to pull it up from St. Francis and later Stephen Covey, seek first to understand and then to be understood. That's the way it gets done. In other words, if I am going to share my heart with you, first objective is not to have you understand my heart, but first to understand yours. Otherwise, we're both thinking about the next thing we're going to say, and neither of us is connecting to anything. So, you know, the next piece I want to address, I'm just going to call agency. Agency refers to, again, this in the face of navigating trauma or difficult circumstances that are extremely challenging. Agency, I'd like to refer here to my or your independent capability or ability to act, to pursue kind of some result. For me, the initial question that I wrestle with is, how can I act or have agency to contribute in some positive way to a hellacious Middle East conflagration? And for that matter, to ubiquitous growing anti-Semitism. For me, the question, though, inflames quickly another sense of, I just don't feel like I'm doing enough. Not only do I judge I'm not really doing enough, but I'm also missing an opportunity to experience agency as a stress and coping aid. Because when I, perhaps when you, have some sense of agency, some sense of doing something that's impactful in a positive way, it does serve as a salve and an antidote to kind of a felt sense of absence of control and powerlessness. How we achieve that agency, I think, varies highly. What agency for me might not be for someone else. So, for example, if one believed prayer was an act that they felt could have a positive impact, yeah, that would be something done to achieve some sense of agency. Another might define agency personally, like as civil disobedience or writing a letter, funding an organization, voting, befriending Holocaust survivors, doing something that for the individual has meaning, has positive agency. I'm not addressing it from an altruistic standpoint, but even kind of from a there's a part of it that serves each of us as individuals.
And so I derive as much, what I'm hearing you say is that I derive as much for myself when I do for others as I give to them.
Yes.
We have one more segment, and we'll be back with Dr. John Reiman after these messages. This is Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick. I am here with psychotherapist Dr. John Reiman, expert in coping with trauma, individual and collective trauma, and we're talking about all the traumas in this world and how to cope with them in this very, very difficult geopolitical age. This is Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick. We'll be back after these messages, as always, inviting you to come on the journey, join in the quest.
In sacred literature and the Bible, God is known by many names. However, which name for God embodies the spiritual wholeness and essence of God? Discover The Real Name of God is a new book by Rabbi Wayne Dossick. He explores and finds the real name of God. Why is that important? Because the name of God unites all religions and is embedded within us. Get The Real Name of God at your favorite bookstore or online at Amazon.com. The ideas in this book can be world-changing. The Real Name of God by Rabbi Wayne Dossick.
One of the best things about the technology available today is being able to listen to HealthyLife.net on the go or while I'm at work. Typically, headphones or earphones are required, and let's face it, sometimes they break or get worn out or lost. To find my latest solution to this, I found the Earphone Solutions website while browsing the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. There are plenty of options from basic inexpensive on-the-go earphones to studio-quality headphones for when I really have time to enjoy everything from rock to bach. Earphone Solutions on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
Rabbi Dr. Wayne Dossick is the award-winning author of 8 best-selling books. Living Judaism, The Complete Guide to Jewish Belief, Tradition, and Practice, is now a classic, used in synagogues, churches, seminaries, and universities throughout the country as the basic introduction to Judaism text, and in homes as the perfect one-volume reference to Jewish faith and observance. 20-Minute Kabbalah, co-written with his wife Ellen Kaufman Dossick, uses Tree of Life mysticism to offer a daily personal spiritual practice that brings you to God, your soul knowing, and your heart's desires. The accompanying audio CD, angelically sung by cantor Kathy Robbins, guides you through all the sweet and holy chants. These and other fine books by Rabbi Dossick, including When Life Hurts and Soul Judaism, are available at Amazon.com. For more information about Indigo Children, visit the website www.soulbysoul.com. And for more information about Kabbalah, visit the website www.20minutekabbalah.com. Let Wayne Dossick's books expand your knowledge and enrich your life.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
It's Spirit Talk Live, Rabbi Wayne Dossick here with Dr. John Ryman, clinical psychotherapist, who is talking to us about trauma and how to cope. So in these last moments, Dr. Ryman, how do we cope when there is, when it feels as if the world is closing in on us? And it's almost as if we have nowhere to turn. There's a line in the Psalms that says, "Mina metzer karati ya," from the depths I call to you, O God. And there are times when we can't get up off the floor, we can't get up off the chair, we can't get out of the bed. I met a woman in Israel whose sister's son, that is her nephew, was killed at the Nova Festival, along with his fiancé and his fiancé's sister, and the mother has almost literally not gotten out of bed for the last 9 months. So, Mina Meitzer, out of the depths. Yeah. The second part of that verse is that in divine expansiveness, God answers me. But not everybody, you know, I'm a religious person, I'm an observant person, I'm a believing person, I'm a faithful person, but not everybody is. So how do we cope with that kind of deep, deep pain?
Yeah, I got the question. I got it. So independent of one particular religiosity or religious practice, I think, for me, the answer to your question about what do you do when it's all closing down on you is to seek, and a number of the kind of strategies that we've touched on so far organize around, in the presence of that closing in, seek ways of opening or expansion. And the final kind of strategy or salve, even. And when I'm talking about a salve, I'm not talking, it's not just about feeling better. That's not what I mean by salve. A dimension of navigating with some of these ways might feel better, but that's finally not the objective. The final piece I'd like to share is to connect with something greater. And so in whatever ways we might individually language or feel this, I think reaching to dial into what both transcends and informs this world can at times be stabilizing and restorative. For me, it's reaching for and knowing that I am being reached for by what I'm going to call an
put in uppercase a vast loving presence. That's just the words that approximate a felt sense, which, by the way, is much more elusive than present. I don't think it, for me, I don't think it matters how we name it, God, the universe, nature, or how we connect with it. I'm reminded of a walk I took 10 years ago with an Orthodox friend from a very Orthodox family, called Rachel. And since we spoke out of everything, I was curious and asked her about what she did during a particular private prayer. And she said to me, well, you know, we don't believe in God. And I'm sort of gobsmacked. I stopped, looked at her, and she said, well, you know what? You reach beyond yourself towards something greater by relating to what you call spirit or God or loving presence. We reach beyond ourselves towards something greater than ourselves by relating to the people of Israel, the language, the culture. So I think as Jews and more broadly, we can enjoy the luxury and license to define kind of what for each of us becomes a way of connecting with something greater. The point here is an invitation to, in whatever way that resonates, add to other stress and coping tools some like highly personal way of opening to and reaching for something bigger or greater. Not to be saved particularly, but to connect. And I recognize that statement could be unpacked a good bit more, but I think we're probably reaching the end of our time.
Now, if we don't call that or relate to God, what would you call it?
I didn't hear your question.
If we don't call it God, beyond the loving presence that you call it, what can people relate to?
I think people name it differently. I said earlier, for example, that I work with traumatized, duty-related trauma from police officers. I can remember a number of times where I would, following a horrific event, take a walk with a traumatized officer in the woods, and we would look around and just sort of be quiet, and then I would notice the officer looked up and just took a big breath, just reset. And we didn't even have to name what that was, but just said, wow, the sky, huh? Well,
Dr. John Ryman, thank you so much for a brilliant conversation this morning. It's been incredibly helpful, I'm sure, to all our listeners. We thank you, Dr. Ryman. We also thank the good folks at HealthyLife.net, Linda McKenzie, the visionary founder, and Jay Cruz, the extraordinary producer, who have made Spirit Talk Live part of the HealthyLife.net family for the last 15 years, and Doc Collins, our extraordinary musician who plays our theme song each and every week. Next month, third Wednesday of the month, September 18th, my guest will be Rabbi Sheldon Lewis. How precious the ground. Rabbi Lewis is a climate activist. His newest book, How Precious the Ground on Which We Stand, Values That Could Save the Earth. Sacred Texts is a manifesto to cherish and preserve the earth as a divine creation and inspire us to do the work to save our precious planet. That's next month on Spirit Talk Live. Until then, dear friends, be good and do good. Be sweet and be holy. Tune your consciousness tune your awareness to oneness consciousness. For in oneness consciousness, you are sourced to strive for the recognition and the reality of one God, one world, one people, the power and the promise of Eden on earth once again. That's why we invite you this month and every month to come on the journey, join in the quest. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dosick. This is Spirit Talk Live. Until next month, Shalom, Salam, Pax, Peace.